I believe, is pro se, and I don't see anyone here on behalf of Mr. Moomin. So, Mr. Smith, good morning to you.
Good morning. Can't please the court, hearing on behalf of the Kelly, the Director of Corrections, Mr. Brakes. I would start off by saying the district court did not have authority to deny informant papyrus on the grounds that appeal would be frivolous. The Court of Appeals, however, correctly decided that the habeas petition was frivolous. The Court of Appeals, however, did err by affirming the district court's denial of IFP for the second appeal and holding the first appeal under suspension pending payment of a docket fee. What the Court of Appeals should have done is it should have reversed and vacated the district court's denial of informant papyrus for the second appeal, should have affirmed the district court denial of informant papyrus in the first appeal, and thus decided both cases at the same time. That result would have been in accordance with what happened in Glass v. Kinney. I'd make a two-part suggested outcome to these appeals.
When, and under that circumstance, when would he have had the opportunity to pay his docket?
Well, there's an interesting thing on habeas cases. By statute, prepayment of the filing fee for habeas cases cannot be required, and that's by Section 29-2824. There's a published opinion by the Court of Appeals acknowledging that habeas statutes do not require prepayment of filing fees. And for that Jackson case, Jackson, I didn't cite it, it's 15 Nebraska App 523. For Jackson, the fees would only be assessed at the end of the case. So essentially what we have is an interlocutory appeals concerning the relevant issue of prepayment of filing fees, which by statute for habeas cases is not required.
So you're suggesting that the outcome here would be different because it's a habeas case. You're not suggesting we would dispose of it in the same fashion if this had been a post-conviction.
I think there's, to me, there's tension between Glass v. Kinney and State v. Carter, because in Glass v. Kinney, what the court does is just simply, it's a habeas case, and simply says, district court was without authority to deny informant papyrus on appeal, and so it just vacates that order on the basis there was no authority, and then proceeds to address the issue of whether the petition was frivolous, and if it was frivolous, then went ahead and affirmed the denial of informant papyrus, cited both cases. What happened here in the Court of Appeals, essentially the Court of Appeals, you had the same issue, which was the habeas petition frivolous, and it's already decided that issue, holds the one appeal in suspension, allowing an inmate, if he wants to do so, to pay a docket fee for a case that's already been decided. In other words, it's already frivolous, so which doesn't really make logical sense. I think the court could rely more on its decision in Glass v. Kinney, which just vacates the one order, decides both cases. And since the decision in both cases is this a frivolous petition, it's the same issue in both cases, so it decides them at the same time and then just decides district courts don't have authority to decide IFP for purposes of an appeal. Essentially, what I would suggest for the outcome is that the court consolidate the two appeals, affirm the district court's denial of informant papyrus for filing the habeas petition on the grounds that petition is frivolous, and then vacate the district court's interference with the attempt to do an IFP for an appeal, or at least having authority to appeal the denial of IFP on appeal.
Which would be what? Compatible with Glass v. Kenney, which did not incorporate the habeas analysis.
I think it incorporates the analysis that the habeas petition was frivolous.
But it did not incorporate the habeas monetary statute.
Fee, yeah.
The fee thing I don't think is in there. But.
Yeah, that is not there. And the State v. Jackson is just a case that's sitting out there in isolation. It doesn't get cited much. I know about it because I argued it. It was one of those late Friday afternoons back in the days of the Court of Appeals when you didn't have a record, which we were just doing a lot of on the clock talking. But the Jackson case is interesting because it does cite the habeas statute. It says you don't have to prepay a filing fee. You don't have to prepay a filing fee. Why would we decide the issue of whether a habeas petition is frivolous for purposes of an interlocutory appeal? And that's why I would say the second suggestion I would make is for the court to issue procedural guidance to district courts for habeas cases involving an IFP application and the petition is frivolous. The suggestion procedurally would be that district courts, if they concluded the petition is frivolous, dismiss the petition on the grounds it's frivolous, tax the cost to the petitioner, which would be the end of the case for Jackson, and thus deny also in form of paupers if the person then wants to appeal, if not one appeal, and the appeal involves the issue, was it frivolous? It's frivolous, we're done, and you assess the costs. If it wasn't frivolous, then you've got a reversal. You don't have one yet. Here is two appeals, with one being held under suspension, or an inmate, if he wants to do so, he'll pay appeal docket fees to decide an issue that's already decided. Logically, that's not efficient. You don't have to go there, and there's an alternative. One appeal and the district courts have a little more guidance on how to handle these type of cases.
But to return to my previous question, and maybe I didn't understand your answer, maybe my fault, wouldn't we then have a different procedure for habeas than we do for post-conviction? Because post-conviction, they have to file a docket fee, don't they?
State v. Jackson was a post-conviction case. And what is unique to post-conviction and habeas is the post-conviction statutes tied to the habeas statutes but not requiring the prepayment of the filing fee. And what happened in Jackson was...
On appeal or just filing the motion?
Filing the motion.
Well, on filing the motion, I grant you.
Sure.
But on the appeal... In a post-conviction, don't they have to deposit the docket fee?
To me, they'd have to pay the docket fee or they would have to file a poverty affidavit
and
to vest jurisdiction.
And consequently, the court then has to decide in a post-conviction whether the IFP application is frivolous.
In a post-conviction, if the court, I guess it depends upon whether you go the Glass or you go the Glass v. Kinney or you go the Carter route. The Carter route essentially says that it seems to be trying to rationalize Jack Glass v. Kinney with Carter. Glass simply says a district court cannot interfere by denying IFP status to someone on appeal by denying them IFP status on appeal. They have a right to an interlocutory appeal, and thus district court cannot interfere for Glass with that right by simply denying IFP status on appeal. If you file your notice of appeal, you file a poverty affidavit, you vested jurisdiction in the appellate court, and then the issue comes, how do you deal with that on appeal? To me, the suspension of one appeal, if when you've already decided the issue, doesn't make a lot of sense. It makes more sense to do what's done in Glass, which could also be done in post-conviction, to simply say, okay, We've docketed two appeals. The court had no authority to deny you IFP for appeal, so we'll vacate that one order, consolidate the two, affirm the district court if you find it frivolous. I think it works. What makes this case a little simpler is simply the habeas statutes specifically say you cannot require prepayment of fees by any officer.
Right. I mean, habeas, I think, I understand the argument that habeas is different, but I'm a little troubled by the notion on post-conviction.
Yeah, I think post-conviction, you could end up having two appeals docketed, but you have to suspend the one and allow the inmate to pay the filing fee for an issue that's already been decided, versus procedurally it would seem to make more sense simply consolidate the cases from the fact that it's found to be frivolous and affirm the district.
I have a procedural question.
Sure.
Even though there is not a filing fee required in a habeas case or in a post-conviction case, might a defendant bringing one of those cases want to call a witness and not be able to pay the witness fee, and might IFP status be requested to basically manage the litigation?
Yes, I could see that. And to me, that would involve a case in which you've got an evidentiary hearing, thus not frivolous, shown a right to have a hearing. So I would distinguish that from what we're talking about here. If you're a district judge, you've got a post-conviction or habeas petition. It's frivolous on its face, and you also get an application for infirm or pauperous. It makes more sense to dismiss it on the basis it's frivolous. That necessarily decides the IFP, and the district court can then assess the cost of the inmate and the appeal.
I have another procedural question. In cases where the defendant is asking leave to proceed IFP to commence a habeas action or commence a post-conviction action, the habeas petition or the motion for post-conviction relief is not actually filed with the clerk, is it? It's held in suspension, and that IFP application is filed and ruled on as a threshold matter. Isn't that right? So does your, from a procedural standpoint, does your argument suggest that the thing that's not yet filed should be dismissed?
I think
rather than not allowed to be filed.
Since the district court has the authority to deny on the grounds it's frivolous, the district court can necessarily say, I'm going to hold your IFP abeyance until you file something, habeas, post-conviction, so I can look at it and decide if it is frivolous, and if it's frivolous, then I can make that determination, which really connected. In other words, IFP is not simply I'm unable to pay. IFP has a conjunction or frivolous. A judge can say, I can't make that determination if you haven't filed, submitted anything.
I didn't make myself very clear. The proposed petition for post-conviction relief is submitted, and the proposed habeas petition is submitted, but they aren't file stepped in by the clerks, right, until there is an IFP granted.
I would disagree with the clerk. I think the clerk...
How would you file it without a fee?
You don't require an appeal in a post-conviction. You don't require a fee in habeas. The clerk, if clerks are doing that, and that was essentially what discussing with the Court of Appeals a decade ago. Clerks are out there doing that, asking me doing that.
Okay. With respect to habeas and post-conviction.
Yes.
But not 1983.
That's different.
Because it's not complicated enough.
Yeah, it's different. Post-conviction, habeas, different animals. That's specifically a statute on no prepayment of fees.
At the risk of taxing my colleagues' patience, what does this argument then do to the statutory language on the second appeal that the person then is entitled to have 30 days to deposit their docket fee?
Statute says that if an objection is sustained, the court vacates the order, on the IFP on the basis he had no authority. Haven't sustained it. He vacated the statute on form of papyrus. Talks about the 30 days. But that's only if the objection is sustained. It's not sustained. Because the court had no authority.
It's unsustained at that point.
It's not sustained. It's vacated.
Okay.
There's no decision on the merits.
Okay. We'll mull that one over.
Maybe that's foreshadowed in Glass v. Kenny.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for the day. The court is adjourned.